following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca.
Hello, listeners around the world on radio streaming and podcast services. This is It's Not Therapy. I'm Leanna Kersner, and I am not a therapist, but I am your source for navigating the madness of mental health using my top 10 sayings for checking in with your best self. This week, while I continue to fight with my new-ish recording equipment, we're talking about screwing up. I don't know about you, but I crossed the 2023 finish line on my face, and I've just been eating dirt ever since. This is my first new episode since the new year, even though I went right back to work on January 2nd. It was hard to get back into things. I'm exhausted and I've been screwing up a lot of stuff since then. There's just this pre-holiday crunch hangover going on with me. And that led to an autoimmune disease flare up and a bunch of other flare ups. And, you know, you get exhausted, you try to juggle too many balls trying to catch up, you drop balls, so you work harder, and that leads to more exhaustion. And mentally, I know I shouldn't be doing this, it's not healthy, but, you know, sometimes we aren't completely in control. And because there's really no right or wrong answer, there's just pros and cons for everything. It's this constant worry that I might be making the wrong decisions. Making choices in a vacuum is not fun. So let's talk about what to do when you screw up tonight. I'm in the headspace for this, right? So here we go. Questions, comments, concerns. Leanna at nottherapyshow.com. L-I-A-N as in Nancy A. At nottherapyshow.com is my direct email. Nottherapyshow is my website. You can fill out the contact form there. Join our mailing list while you're there. Or social media. Nottherapyshow on X, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. I should probably start plugging my ways to join the Discord. I will get on that next week. I'm not quite ready yet. Have to meet out that rollout. It's still fairly new. Okay. So what do you do when you screw up? Assess where you went wrong. Figure out how to get back on track. Apologize if you feel that's appropriate. Take a day to lick your wounds if need be, and then move forward. The 24-hour rule is super important there. What not to do when you screw up? Act before stopping to think things through. Panic, which causes you to act before stopping to think things through. Deflect and project blame. Lash out. Catastrophize. Get stuck trying to do a mental do-over. But guess which set of reactions our brains are most inclined to do? Yep. The what not to do column. This is science. Our brains tend to tell us to do all the wrong things when we feel panic, shame, or humiliation, because these things feel bad. Hulk smash bad things. Unfortunately, Hulk smash is the absolute worst thing to do when you feel bad because you screwed up. Either someone is telling you screwed up or you know you screwed up, and there are consequences to that. Hulk smash just makes things worse. And so Hulk feels more shame about screwing up and then smashing. And the worse you feel, the harder it is to admit that you screwed up. So we're going to talk about getting better at screwing up. That this is something I'm an expert in. I screw up a lot. More on that later. Top 10 phrase, perfect is a lie. Stop trying to be perfect. It's not possible to completely avoid making mistakes. All we can do is our best to catch mistakes early and correct them as soon as possible. The more you try to do in life, the more mistakes you make. But not trying to do anything hard. Well, that's the biggest mistake of all. our relationship with mistakes, you know, the prevailing theory is it comes from our parents. Oh, our poor parents. But I've found working with clients, people with supportive parents also have issues with mistake making that come from being picked on in school by teachers and other students. You know, this belief that one mistake is it, you're destroyed in that community forever. That's a very real belief right now. Our culture has an anxiety epidemic tied to this idea that a single mistake could destroy our whole life. When we talk about cancel culture, we talk about that. Oh, like I said before, I teach my clients, I'm not here to tell them how to be perfect. I'm here to teach them how to get better at making mistakes. I am going to repeat this. Get better at making mistakes as opposed to trying to avoid mistakes completely. You just want to avoid the same mistakes over and over again, the known mistakes, because that's the only thing you can control. If you're constantly hypervigilant to any mistake, you are going to burn yourself out. Learn from my mistakes, okay? I'm living proof. That's no way to live. If you relate to mistakes as proof you're a failure or you're worthless, it's going to be harder to recover from them. It's even going to be harder to admit you made them. But if you relate to mistakes as part of a learning process and you're surrounded by people who, you know, are willing to work with you as long as you own the mistake and are showing that you are seriously working to do better, well, it's a lot easier to own your mistakes and not feel terrible about them in both internal, in your own mind, and external, your social group, your professional group. You know, it's a lot easier when you have that supportive environment, both internally and externally, right? And that's the first step to getting better at screwing up. Expect that you're going to screw up sometime. Rarely do you mean to. In my case, sometimes I do. Sometimes it's, you know, the old Star Trek Kobayashi Maru. I have to figure out how I'm going to fail. I pick the best route of failure. I've been doing that a lot lately. It is exhausting, but owning that choice is far better than feeling completely powerless. And yeah, it's a horrible thought at first that mistakes are inevitable, especially if you were punished severely, as I was as a child. But, you know, my earliest memories are of punishment for relatively small things. I was really little. Then my later memories, the strongest ones are of punishment. And then I got into the working world, and my strongest memories are of punishment. It's very hard to face the reality, the inevitability of mistakes when that's your background. It's a horrible thought. If that's too painful for you to contemplate, that's where therapy comes in. And this is, it's not therapy. We can't fix that here. So we're going to move on. And let's face it. There are different kinds of mistakes. Well-meaning ones are a different category than behaving maliciously. More on that later. Visualizing what to do if a mistake is made in advance, pre-planning, can be very helpful at maintaining emotional regulation when the shame and humiliation hits. Something like, okay, when someone says I've made a mistake, or I realize I've made a mistake, it's going to feel shameful, embarrassing, and even scary. I'm going to take a few breaths and wait for those feelings to lessen before I do anything. Now, this kind of preparation, if you've got somebody neurodivergent in your family especially, this is actually something I learned working with autistic people. And they have to prepare for things because it's so overwhelming in the moment. And I took that and I thought, you know, maybe I can use that even though I don't have autism. And maybe neurotypical people, I am not neurotypical, but neurotypical people can use this as well. It's essential for people on the autism spectrum, but it's helpful for all of us. This is the gift of knowing neurodivergent people. But I know what you're thinking. What if somebody's screaming at me? It's real easy to say. You know, it's really easy to take a breath, but what if someone's just on me? Well, that's on them. Okay. It's one thing if somebody raises their voice, realizes it, catches it, and calms down. But sustained screaming over a simple mistake is abusive behavior. It's a sign that someone is out of control. You have a right to walk away. Even at work, yes, it may cost you your job, but if your job is somebody screaming at you every day or far too frequently, if you're walking around afraid of getting screamed at, learn from my mistakes. It's not worth it. You know, going to HR is easy to say, but a lot of HR departments exist just to protect the company. So if this is a concern at work, there's nothing wrong with at least looking for a new job now. If you feel like you can't walk away, then the problem isn't really the mistake. It's the bigger problem with your environment. The theme for 2024 is going to be more looking at your environment, because this is something you can control. You can choose who to associate with. You can choose what behavior you will accept. It's hard. Trust me, it's hard. But these things are within your control, and environmental factors are so overlooked in mental health. Having pre-planned responses makes it easier to foster that positive environment because you're learning by example. It's easier to act, you know, evenly. I don't like calmly, because nobody's calm during these things. Calm is like perfect. Stop trying to be calm. You can't control if you're calm. You can control having to create a response on the fly when your brain just wants to run and hide, right? Or fight or flight. Freeze, fight, fawn or flight. And that fawning thing, I have to do a whole show on fawning. Oh, God. But that can still falter. If you have, like many people, an intense issue with fairness, we've done a deep dive on fairness in a previous episode, so I'm going to jump ahead on how not to screw up when you feel like you're being unfairly told you screwed up. Okay, top 10 phrase: don't let problems that aren't your fault lead to mistakes that are. Is the person telling you this important to you? Answer that question. Do you trust them? Do they have a habit of picking on you? You know, if they're not important to you, if you don't trust them, if they're just a negative person, who cares what they think? Their opinion of you doesn't matter. And if you have a tendency to act on the opinions of people, you don't know if you have your back, that's something to work out in therapy. If the person telling you you've screwed up is important to you, then it's either, you know, an honest misunderstanding, or remember, this is about when it feels unfair. Even though this person is important to you, they're taking out their damage on you, you know. And if you think that's it, set a boundary. Try to be generous in your response to the screw up, because that's what you want when the shoe's on the other foot. But make it really clear, you won't accept mind reading. You won't accept accusations. There's a lot of gaslighting going on with mind reading. Again, we may have to revisit that topic. But hey, you can tell I've had a lot of time to think lately. Yeah, let's move on. Okay. If it's a misunderstanding, that can be worked out, as long as everybody stays rational and affirming the trust is actively done. We trust each other. We're friends. We want to work this out. So let's do that. Again, don't try to aim for calm, because the situation sucks and that's not reasonable. Top 10 phrase: healthy goals are based on things you can control. If you can, thank them for the feedback, even if it stinks, because you know they're doing it from a good place. If you don't know they're doing it from a good place, that's a warning sign. If you need time to think, tell them as much. Don't react if you don't trust your own reactions. If you need time to think, I'll get back to you. That's one thing. If you don't want to talk about it again because you think they're wrong, say you'll take their comments under advisement or you'll get back to them, right? If you see merit in their complaint, even if you don't know quite what to do about it yet, say that, own that, apologize, work on a plan to do better actively. The sooner and more sincerely you do that, the better the results will be. It amazes me how many people think a grumbled apology 3 days after the inciting incident is enough. It isn't. A regulated person doesn't need 3 days to see sense. The longer you take, the better the apology and the resulting behavioral change has to be. And this stuff may seem deceptively simple with me talking about it here, yeah? And it's simple, but that doesn't mean it's not difficult. And we haven't even gotten into the early childhood trauma part of dealing with screwing up. I got into it a bit in my case, but we're going to pick up there after the break. I'll get into why making mistakes makes some people lash out like they're fighting with their mother. We're going to do that after the break on It's Not Therapy, NotTherapyShow.com. Join the mailing list there while you're there. Fill out the contact form if you've got questions or comments. Not Therapy Show on X, that's Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. We'll get into mommy issues and screwing up after the break.
The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca.
We're back on It's Not Therapy. I'm still Leanna Kersner. I'm still not a therapist, and we're still talking about what to do when you screw up. Before the break, I gave some basics, but let's face it, every so often we all have moments where we regress to the emotional age of 8 from sheer embarrassment due to an error, and we lash out at some person, like, as I said before the break, we're fighting with our mother. I've been on the receiving end a lot of those. I've done it myself. We all do it, because mom damage is real. Yeah, our moms. They raised us. We owe them a lot. And for a lot of us, they are a big source of our dysfunction when it comes to conflict, because they were the primary caregiver. And therefore, they were the person we fought with the most when we were little. If mom couldn't admit mistakes, we don't learn how. If mom punished us harshly for making mistakes, we learn to hide our errors instead of admitting them. And when we're cornered, every mommy issue we have ends up spewing out in a fountain that just makes the whole thing more humiliating after the fact. Because yeah, we threw a tantrum and got into a fight with a ghost from the past who overlaid onto the person we were actually dealing with, and now they think we're a bad, crazy person because we acted bad, crazy. Now, this isn't something inherent to women. It's not something inherent to mothers, okay? Some people have this issues with the dad. But with dads, again, it's who was the primary caregiver. You know, if neglect, it's its own thing. So I'm talking about moms here just because, let's face it, the incompetent father is a sexist trope. I think we need to talk more about the mistakes moms make without making it seem like they're evil or bad people. Female attracted people, that means straight guys and, you know, lesbian women. If you don't deal with your mommy issues, you will eventually wreck every relationship with a woman you have. Not all women are your mother, no matter how miserable she made you. I'll have to do an entire episode on toxic moms one day. That'll be a barn burner. This is a huge issue. The reason that mommy issues flare up when we're embarrassed about mistakes is that mom, like I said, is still the primary caregiver for most people. Again, it's not about women. It's not about motherhood. It's that primary caregiver role. So when we have an embarrassment tantrum, we're having a flashback fight with our mom when we were 13 and every emotion was reality. I know this might seem Freudian, but Freud insisted this was true for everybody, and it isn't. If your mother was someone who could admit that she made a mistake, this isn't an issue for you. You got modeled behavior. I grew up in a house where neither parent admitted mistakes because I grew up in the tail end of the children should be seen and not heard thinking. Parents were the ultimate authority. If you were under their roof, you obeyed them or they told you to get out. So I had to learn to admit and own mistakes the hard way. That was fun. There was a lot of screwing up, but at least I can detail how I did it. So step one, you have to accept that maybe mommy and or daddy, or mommy and mommy, or daddy and daddy didn't love you like you wanted, and deal with that. So you don't take that out on others. You don't repeat the cycle. That part right there was about 5 years of my life. Get it now so it's shorter for you. There are support systems for doing this. Therapy. Therapy can be great. This is not therapy. In the meantime, you can fake an outward confidence using the improv technique of yes and. This only works if you can correctly identify your feelings enough to know that when you're feeling ashamed or humiliated because you secretly know you screwed up, right? This isn't about taking the blame for things that aren't your fault. This is about a healthy amount of fair accountability when you're actually in the wrong. One of the situations that wore me out recently was a guy I know was approaching me seeming to be apologizing for monopolizing a conversation. But after a brief I'm sorry, he then proceeded to complain about a third party who wasn't present for this part of the conversation. In doing so, he blamed that third party for something I actually did. And I own that. I said, well, I was the one that took the conversation down that road, so your problem's with me. Now, to my surprise, this guy didn't know how to handle that. The conversation spiraled into, well, it became an argument with himself where he sprayed accusations all over the place, responding to a whole bunch of things I didn't say. And he eventually accused me of treating him like a child because I said we should take the weekend so he could cool off and we try again next week. Yep. Standard business comms training got interpreted as treating the guy like a child. Because like I said, he was having an argument with himself. He wasn't fighting me in that moment. He was battling the ghost of mom. Obviously, mom here is something of an abstraction. It could be a disapproving teacher, another female caregiver. But in this case, I got the distinct impression that I wasn't me in his traumatized, regressive state. I was generic, mean lady who was mean to him and also mean. Very mean. So very mean. Why are you mean, lady? Lady mean. One of the things that caused an escalation was that he kept non-apologizing, and I kept calling him on that. Non-apologizing is a habit a lot of people pick up from families where the apology is used to shut down a conversation completely instead of serving as the beginning of a more productive discussion. The words, I'm sorry, are not a get-out-of-jail-free card. Take the words, I said I was sorry, what more do you want from me, out of your vocabulary, because they make you sound like half of the honeymooners having an argument right before Ralph yelled right to the moon, Alice. It's amazing that sitcoms once made a man threatening to punch his wife into a comedic tagline, isn't it? If you grew up in a high conflict house, then you probably tried to hide mistakes so that your parents wouldn't fight over them and you wouldn't have to feel the intense guilt of being the reason one parent abused the other parent. Enough about me. I had to separate from two distinct instincts whenever I realized I'd made a mistake. One was to grovel for forgiveness so my dad didn't hit me, even though I hadn't seen him in 15 years. The memory was that strong. You know, the other instinct was to replicate my father's abusive behavior so I didn't have to grovel. And the thing I lived in fear of more than anything was being like my father. So the fact that I'd rather do that than grovel sometimes just shows how untenable the groveling was. This was really the core of the complex trauma that ended me up in therapy. The constant yelling and occasional violence in the home when I was a kid. But that was wrapped in so many layers deep under an eating disorder, sexual abuse trauma, workplace bullying, and being stalked. Well, it just seemed like it was not that big a deal. But it was the thing I was most commonly encountering in day-to-day life. And that's why it was wrecking my life. Compared to the other things, yeah, it seems small. But if it was so small, why couldn't I break the patterns? Well, because I was flippin' terrified, that's why. But one day I just got so desperate to break the cycle that I decided to just not do either. I didn't respond as a person berated me and then berated me for not responding and then told me I was scaring them because I wasn't responding to them berating me for not responding. Of course, the tears streaming down my face weren't a cue that, hey, maybe I should stop berating her, but that's their burden to bear, not mine. This was humiliating at the time. Not fighting back, not doing anything active was humiliating. But I found it less humiliating later. Not responding was better in the long run than actively and unsuccessfully appeasing or being the bigger bully. That was enough encouragement to repeat the inaction. Even though it was terrifying because I kept flashing back to getting smacked or grabbed and thrown around as a child, I still preferred not having to feel guilty for my response for weeks after the fact because my gut told me that groveling wasn't sincerely apologizing. It was just trying to make the attack stop. And being the bigger bully, well, I knew that was flat out wrong. The problem with stillness in those moments is that eventually the other person's tirade blurs into the stuff people have said to you over the years, and that hurts. And you can roll it all the way back to something that happened when you were 6 or 7 years old, or worse, just a feeling from when you were too young to know where the feeling really came from, and there's no way around that. You need to get through it, because if you start talking when you're that deep in trauma, that's when you pull a, you're not my parent, to someone who may or may not deserve it. And frankly, if someone really is treating you like a child, all you're going to get in response to accusing them of treating you like a child is, well, then stop acting like one. It may or may not be true. Either way, certain accusations are just conversation killers, and stop treating me like a child is one of them. So maybe better to just end the conversation than to fling that accusation out there. Now, that doesn't mean it's sometimes true, and that doesn't mean it isn't something you have to work on, but it might be better to bring it up at a calmer moment because you're just going to get rejected at the time. The thing about being still when you're processing making a mistake or being accused of something is that it's not making the situation better, but it's also not making it worse. And that, not making it worse, is good in the early minutes. It's much better to get your bearings than to panic and start with the dreaded explanations because you don't want the mommy issues to come pouring out. What? Explanations are bad? Yeah. Oh, mes amis. We will get to that after the break. What's wrong with explanations? Liana at nottherapyshow.com. L-I-A-N as in Nancy A at nottherapyshow.com or nottherapyshow, the website. If my name is hard for you to remember how to spell, nottherapyshow.com. Join our mailing list while you're there. Fill out the contact form or at nottherapyshow on X, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. When you screw up, whatever you do, don't start explaining when we come back after the break.
The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca.
We're back and it's the therapy. I'm still Liana Kirzner. I'm still not a therapist. We're still talking. So you screwed up. And before the break, I teed up my extra special advice for recovering from a mistake. Don't explain why you made the mistake. People hate this advice. They hate it. But hear me out. Explaining might feel good, but it doesn't do good if you're making the problem worse the longer you talk. Top 10 phrase, listen twice before you talk once. If you're in a hole, stop digging. If you'd like to question, comment, concern, feedback, anything at all, send a message to Liana at nottherapyshow.com. L-I-A-N-A. Nottherapyshow.com is my email. Nottherapyshow.com. Join the mailing list there. Or at nottherapyshow on X, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, all that stuff. Okay. If you want your explanation to help instead of cause more problems after you've made a mistake, the words, "I made a mistake," have to come out of your mouth or your keyboard or your phone. It's amazing how many people leave out that piece of communication. They launch into a fawn response, that groveling I was talking about that I did, and you neglect to include the words, "I made a mistake," because you're so panicked about the fact that you made a mistake. You think it's a given that you made a mistake. But if you explain without the words, "I made a mistake," no, it's not a given. What are some other words or phrases that people leave out when they're in a panicked fawn response? "I'm sorry" is a big one. "I want to make this right. Here's how. What do you think?" Stuff like that. These are essential pieces of communication that you can explain how you're going to make it right, but expect somebody to say, "No, that's not going to help," if you didn't listen twice before you talk once. It's better to really not explain until things have calmed down or the other person asks for one, because when you've put your foot in your mouth or you've messed up, the more words you speak, the more additional mistakes you risk making. If you don't know what's going on and why the person is upset, find out before proceeding. Don't let problems that aren't your fault lead to mistakes that are, and listen twice before you talk once. It's better when you screw up to just say where you think you went wrong. Make sure that's right from the other person. You're on the same page. Very important. Say how you're going to fix it. Say you're sorry. And then the most important part of recovering from a mistake, listen. Listen to the other person. Really listen. And I know. It's the not fun part of communication for a lot of people. I love listening, personally. But when you're ashamed and embarrassed, when you're humiliated, listening is the hardest thing in the world because your brain is screaming at you all this bad stuff and it ends up being filtered through that additional haze. But listening effectively, really listening, is an essential skill to learn. And it doesn't mean, you know, listen. It doesn't mean you have to eat abuse. People can't just say anything they want to you. No. It's amazing how many people go right to that, and that indicates a problem with past or present environment. People can't say anything they want to you. That being said, the raw fact that someone's angry at you, merely being angry at you, that isn't in and of itself abuse. Depending on what you did, you know, it could be fair, their anger. And that's why explaining can backfire. If you're not careful, it can come across as you explaining why somebody shouldn't be angry with you, why it wasn't a mistake. You can come off as overly defensive. You were completely reasonable. And even though you said you made a mistake, if you talk for too long after, "I made a mistake, let me explain," real talk here. That can often sound like you're just saying you made a mistake because, again, the big mean lady who was mean to you, how dare they be mean? How dare they say you made a mistake? Seriously, don't say you made a mistake. Don't apologize if you don't really mean it. Apologies are about you admitting you were wrong. They're not to get a particular outcome. There's one reason to say you're sorry, because you're sorry. There's one reason to say you made a mistake, because you made a mistake. That other person might not respond well. They might not forgive you. But the benefit, even when it doesn't go well, is one, you've shown you're willing to admit you're wrong when you see that you're wrong. Two, other people see that you're able to admit you're wrong. And so it means more when you really don't think you're wrong, because you've accepted responsibility in the past. Again, apologies are not manipulation tools. And for God's sake, at least for me, don't focus on how bad you feel. A non-abusive person doesn't want you to feel terrible, okay? They just want you to fix the problem. Great quote from God of War Ragnarok. Do not be sorry, be better. If you focus on how bad you feel, it can actually come across as insincere. If it's actually not that big a deal and you're, I feel so terrible, I hate myself, that can come off as a guilt trip. And this may surprise a lot of people because, again, those mommy issues, the person you're talking to right now, adult to adult, they're not your mother who wielded guilt trips like a weapon, okay? A non-abusive person who cares about you doesn't want you to feel bad. So what do you do by way of explanation if it's appropriate? Keep it short. I'm not kidding. Keep it short. Really simple example. I was stuck in traffic on Monday and I was late for a client. I let them know I was stuck in traffic while I was stuck in traffic, apologized when I arrived, and I said I need to remember to leave earlier in rush hour. Then I thanked them for their patience. Do you see how quick that was? But you've got no excuses, explanation, apology, what I need to do better. Thank you for your patience. That little bit of gratitude and awareness of how to hopefully not repeat the mistake can really do wonders. Now, lateness for me, it's a chronic thing, and it may surprise a lot of people that I hate being late. It's embarrassing. It makes me feel stupid, and it happens all the time because I am chronically overbooked. And even though I do my best to reduce the overbooking, I still need to do better. I don't like being more than 5 minutes late for a client. I'm grateful that I have very understanding clients who would rather I take an extra 10 minutes with someone in crisis than be strictly on time. But I still want to do better. It's still something I want to fix gradually. It's not going to happen overnight, but I do take it seriously. Do you see there how I admitted a failing, a weakness, without making it the worst thing in the world that I feel so terrible about and hate myself? Yeah, that's what accountability looks like. Accountability isn't groveling. Accountability is dignified, and it's accompanied by gratitude, because people don't have to understand. So what happens when they don't? We'll talk about that after our final break. Leanna at nottherapyshow.com, L-I-A-N as in Nancy A, nottherapyshow.com. Nottherapyshow.com is the website. If you can't remember my email address, join the mailing list while you're on our website, or at nottherapyshow on Twitter and Instagram. When you screw up and aren't forgiven, when we come back.
The following program is a peer-to-peer advice show and does not diagnose mental health conditions. If you're seeking social services, please call or text 211 or go to 211.ca.
We're back on It's Not Therapy, still talking So You Screwed Up. I'm still Leanna Kersner. I'm still not a therapist. And final segment, I promised we'd talk about when screwing up leads to a break that you can't fix. This happens to everyone at some point, and it doesn't mean you're a bad person. Sometimes good people, it's two good people, they're incompatible for each other at work and or personally. Occasionally it is an indication, hopefully just occasionally, that you're acting like a bad person, which means changes need to be made. Like I said off the top, there are different kinds of mistakes. And there's also a difference between making different mistakes because you're trying to adapt, the way I talked about overcorrecting and then overcorrecting the overcorrection and then overcorrecting the overcorrection, the overcorrection, right? That's different than making the same mistakes or the same type of mistake over and over and over again. Sometimes it has been my fault and people have had a right to be angry. Maybe not as angry as they got, but they have a right to be angry. Sometimes they have the right to cut me off. You know, if it's not a good fit with a client, that's their call. You know, that's not abandonment. It's a consequence. It's a reality. And that can be hard to admit. Rejection hurts. Defensive anger, even rage, can seem like a tempting alternative. And yes, someone breaking up with us, cutting us off, distancing themselves, or firing us, those things hurt. Really hurt. Sometimes things just hurt, even if you try not to let it get to you. Even if you try to say they don't mean it. Even if you try to say it's not true. It really hurts. And it's really hard in those moments to see how anything positive can come out of that kind of conflict precisely because it hurts so bad. But these can be the most powerful learning experiences in our lives. And the goal is to make them positive learning instead of lifelong trauma. Now, some of us struggle to accept loss a lot more than others. We don't know how to grieve, so we spend a long time in denial, hoping for a reconciliation that we sabotage with anger and blame. But if something keeps hurting and hurting and even gets more painful over time, that's not you overreacting. That's your mind telling you that changes need to be made so that you can be happier. Again, nobody's perfect. It's important to not get so deep in victimhood that we can't see the things that we can control because we're focused on the things we can't. If we own our choices and don't catastrophize our losses, then we can learn from our mistakes and actually thrive. Other people make things really complicated sometimes, though, right? A lot of people are lousy at explaining where they're coming from, even when they have a valid point. Many people are terrible listeners. And it's trendy right now to blame everyone else for our trauma instead of doing something about our trauma. And that just makes the trauma worse. A feeling of helplessness is the core of trauma. So if you convince yourself that everything is done to you by other people, you're going to stay in trauma. There are a lot of people out there who don't like me. Some people have cause because we do things very differently or, you know, I made mistakes. Some people, a lot of people, manufactured excuses to hate me. People hate me because of my race, my gender, and my religion, especially lately. And they can't admit that this is the core of the problem, so that's not going to change. Hate, long term, is a complete waste of time. Hate is an inability to let go of a situation where you lost. Hate is still a relationship, and it's a diversion from addressing the fear, grief, and shame that's hiding underneath the hatred. But hate is exhausting, and it inspires us to do destructive things. There are people I've cut contact with because if I stuck around, I was gonna hate them. If you don't want to be a person that people do that to, listen better. These people keep taking shots at me through third parties to this day because part of the problem was that they are vindictive and they gossip. They're never going to stop this behavior because they're not willing to look inside and they're not willing to move on and they're certainly not willing to admit they did anything wrong. And these people fewer and fewer people want anything to do with them because they're consumed with vengeance. More on that in a future episode. There's plenty of things I've done in my life that were my fault. And it's important I recognize them and the bad choices I made so I don't repeat those mistakes. I wish, especially lately, that I felt less constantly emotionally battered than I do, but I'm far from the only person who feels this way. There's some of that I can control, but times are just tough right now. We're all doing a lot of stuff that we don't necessarily want to do to get through. Earlier this week, I slipped and had a period of viciously beating myself up. It was an attempt to control a situation where I gave in because I didn't want to be branded difficult or a problem. That whole "you're defined by being annoying" thing got the better of me and I cracked. There are some mistakes I made that I'm having trouble moving past right now, and the moderators on my Discord forums told me that I give people too many chances. And they're right. And that's hard to hear because the criticism I used to get is that I'm too rough on people. And before that, it was because I didn't have boundaries. So it's frustrating to get allegedly conflicting information. Part of me feels like I can't win for losing. But every single time the people saying it were right. And every single time it hurt like hell to hear because I didn't mean to screw up. But I did. And then I overcorrected. And I overcorrected again. And that's life. And there's no point in being angry about it. But I just wanted to not screw up for a change, you know? I just want something to work without everything being so hard. I really envy the luck of people who have things easier. And I'm exhausted by the emotional abuse I've been taking, which is what caused my moderators to tell me I was giving people too many chances. And you know what? I can take that as an achievement that my team feels comfortable enough to tell me when I'm off the mark. That, I can say in that case, I did good. But I'm terrified of having to toughen up. Because that brings with it just a different kind of abuse. And that abuse becomes public. People slandering me more on social media. You know, people being aware of how deep some of the problems go instead of the more private abuse that isn't, you know, persuading more people to hate me where I can see it. But welcome to being in the media, especially the Canadian media. It's not a terribly supportive place. People are great at criticizing and the money sucks. And you know what you don't get? A lot of praise. It's not like you see on TV. But then someone on the Discord server sent me a message this morning saying they were in a session with their therapist and they just watched a YouTube video I'd done where I showed an example of a feelings wheel. This is somebody who struggles to communicate how they're feeling, so they asked the therapist if she had a feelings wheel. And she did. And it helped. So I was a positive influence there instead of just being an object of scorn and failure. So I'm going to focus on that legitimately good thing I did as the spine of my path to correcting my latest series of mistakes. You know, I have to combine that real help for people. You know, I've been helping people navigate the drug shortage by finding them, you know, chewable ADHD drugs and things like that. That's another win. And so I have to focus on these positives, these legitimately good things as I correct for the mistakes I'm making out of fear. And, you know, frankly, I'm probably just doing too much, taking too many hits, going too fast, which is also scary to recognize because if I don't get work, I don't get paid. And you know, that's what led to me getting chronically ill in the first place. So I do need to make changes because being hurt sucks. Being sick is worse. And while I don't need to be liked, I like being liked. And the abuse of late has cut me off from feeling liked, even though I mentally know that there are people out there who do like me. I know I'm being irrational because I'm so very tired. And I know you listening, you're probably so very tired too. times are really tough right now for a lot of people. Everything's more expensive. Political fighting is starting to increase because election year, we're in for more pain before it gets better. So what can you control? If someone does something good, tell them. If someone helps you, show sincere appreciation. Tell the people around you how much they mean to you, because none of us hears that enough. None of us can avoid screwing up forever. The only thing we can control is doing actively good things while respecting the boundaries of others to balance out the bad and learn from our mistakes. But if you focus on the good you do, making mistakes and actually correcting instead of just making a batch of new mistakes, it's a lot easier because we have signposting. We all lose and break relationships sometimes. None of us is immune to that loss. But it doesn't have to be the story that defines your life. If you learn from your mistakes instead of just punishing yourself for them. That's our show, Leanna at nottherapyshow.com, nottherapyshow.com. Join our mailing list on nottherapyshow.com, at nottherapy on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram. Remember, you're crazy is only a problem if it's hurting you. Bye for now.